The following is an episode of The Cultural Hall. You can find us online at theculturalhall.com. You can follow us on Twitter at The Cultural Hall. You can find us on Pinterest by finding The Cultural Hall, as well as Facebook. It's facebook.com/The Cultural Hall. The Cultural Hall is a source for all information about Mormons and culture. The Cultural Hall is not endorsed or supported by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, although several of its participants are members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. This special episode of The Cultural Hall, we visit with Elder Jensen, one of the two missionaries that taught Jody Arias the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, here's the deal. Jody Arias, for those who don't know, is accused and in court. It's a big court trial right now for the killing of Travis Alexander, which occurred on June 4th, 2008. Alexander's body was found at his home in Mesa, Arizona. His wounds consisted of 29 stab wounds, a slit throat, and a shot to the head. The death was ruled by the medical examiner to be a homicide. The trial began on January 2nd, 2013, for Alexander's ex-girlfriend, Jody Arias, who is charged with his murder. Arias has pled not guilty and testified on February 6th, 2013, that she killed Alexander in self-defense. The case has received widespread media attention. And now we visit with Elder Jensen. Thank you so much for being here on The Cultural Hall with us.
No problem. No problem at all.
So let's talk about this. Let's talk about the first time that you ever met Jody. How did that happen?
Well, I was actually serving in Palm Desert, California at the time. That's where Jody was living when we began teaching her, and where she was eventually baptized.
Okay.
Within Palm Desert, California. So I had just been transferred to Palm Desert, which is right by Palm Springs in Southern California. And I think it was a couple of days after I had arrived there, we got a phone call to our apartment where we were living, and a voice message was left on our machine from Travis Alexander. He called saying, you know, "Hi elders, my name's Travis Alexander," and he had mentioned that he was living in Arizona or something, but that he had a friend that he knew, her name was Jody, and that he had been talking to her about the church, and she had expressed quite a bit of interest in learning more about it, and said that he had given her a copy of the Book of Mormon, and that she had started reading the book, and that we should give her a call and try to set up a time that we could go talk to her further and answer her questions and things like that. So,
which is pretty typical for situations where members are referred. That's not a typical situation for a Mormon missionary to encounter, but it is pretty typical for them to say, "Hey, you know what? I've talked with such and such a friend, and have told them a little bit about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I've given him a Book of Mormon, and now and go teach him." That's not anything out of the ordinary.
No, that's pretty normal. If a member of the church, has met somebody that's expressed interest, they'll usually say, "Hey, you know, I can answer your questions for you, but I know two guys that probably live right next to you that this is what they do full time, and they can come and answer your questions and teach you more about the church." So yeah, then they'll call the missionaries and have us meet them. Yeah, that's pretty normal if that's to happen. Though, as a missionary, it didn't happen as often as we'd like, because usually the people are a lot more receptive if they know somebody that's a member of the church, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah, I got that message, and so I was the first one that called Jody, and she answered the phone, and I remember just introducing myself, Elder Jensen, and I was a missionary from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and that we had got a phone call or had talked to Travis, who was a friend of hers, that mentioned that she was interested in learning more about the church. So I kind of chatted with her for a minute about that, and she was very nice over the phone, and, you know, definitely seemed sincere in her interest. And I asked her if she had been, you know, I said, "I understand Travis had given you a copy of the Book of Mormon," and she said yes, and I asked her if she'd been reading, and she said yes, and I asked, you know, where she was in the book, and normally somebody's going to be very close in the first couple of chapters within the book, but I asked her, and she said that she was just finishing up the first full book in the Book of Mormon, which is First Nephi, which is, you know, quite a few pages, many chapters, over 20 chapters, and so to me, I was like, "Oh, wow, she's read quite a bit, you know. She's definitely interested in what she's reading." So we set up a time to go meet with her, and I, you know, timeline-wise, it was a while ago, and I'm not exactly sure how that happened, but my companion and I went and met with her, and we actually took with us our ward mission leader,
which is a guy who lives locally within the congregation, who isn't a missionary full time, but can be there as kind of like a static person once the missionaries kind of come in and out. That's someone that's always there.
Yeah, somebody that's the kind of their responsibility to help people who are coming to church for the first time or whatever. And, you know, we do that typically. Well, I mean, in this instance, we did that because Jody was, you know, a single female. And we always, as members, or, you know, as missionaries, we always are very conscious of those kinds of things to make sure that we're not in situations that could be misconstrued as a bad situation in terms of, you know, whatever, guys and girls, you get the drift. So
yeah,
anyway,
accusations, so you can, you're just covering your back.
Exactly. And, you know, it's always nice, too, to have somebody that lives, who's lived in that area, to meet them and stuff like that. So, anyway, we went and met with her, and I remember being very impressed with Jody. Just, you know, she was very polite when we met her, and, you know, she was obviously a young, attractive female, you know, but she was very nice. She didn't seem very conceited in our interactions with her. She was very genuine in what she asked. She seemed very intelligent in the questions she was asking and was very receptive. And, you know, over the course of many weeks, we started teaching Jody. I think we would meet with her like once a week, and we'd, you know, have different lessons prepared for her that would help her better understand the teachings of the church, and we gave her, you know, reading assignments, which she always did. You know, as a missionary, to have somebody always read or always do their homework, so to speak, is not completely typical. Usually someone will say, oh, you know, I read the first little part, but I didn't read it all, you know.
Or I didn't get it, or nope, I didn't do that at all. It's probably more common.
Yeah, which, you know, you can understand. I mean, so we usually, you know, help people through things like that, but she was always prepared, which, you know, was unusual. So, you know, to me, it seemed like she was a very good investigator. Investigator is something we call somebody who's investigating the church, mm-hmm. you know, trying to find out if it's true or if they believe it. And so she was what I called a golden investigator, which means somebody who's just exactly like I said, you know, was interested, was doing their homework, was really asking good questions, was progressing in their understanding of the church and things like that. So
now during this process, did you get the feeling like Travis would, you know, talk with her on the phone about it, or, you know, be helping with the process, or was it just strictly her herself and you and the ward mission leader?
No, Travis, at least from my understanding interaction, you know, Travis was never there present for any of the lessons that we taught. And it seemed like to me that they weren't discussing or talking about these things a lot as we were teaching them. It sounded like that, you know, Travis was like, hey, here's my friend, and then he was living out of state, and so they didn't really talk a whole lot. It seemed like Travis didn't seem like he was a part of this process on a day-to-day basis. You know, I'm sure she would call him from time to time to ask him questions about things, but it seemed from my perspective that he was kind of, you know, on the outside, letting things happen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we could tell, though, that, you know, he was a friend of hers, and we could tell that she definitely had some interest in him, you know, whether it was romantically or, you know, just a really good friend. We didn't know at that time. But that was obviously a motivation for her to learn about the church. But, you know, in us teaching her, she didn't. The types of questions she was asking us and things like that seemed very genuine in terms of, you know, her really wanting to know, as opposed to just doing it because she had a friend or she wanted to, you know, get closer to somebody else.
Okay. So over the process of meeting her until the time that she was baptized, how long are we talking?
It was probably maybe a period of 4 or 5 weeks.
So not very long.
Not very long, no. Maybe 6 weeks. I can't remember exactly, but it wasn't, yeah, it was maybe a month and a half or so.
And at the point that she decided to be baptized, I mean, is that something that Travis was present for as well? Is that, how did that happen?
Well, what we do as missionaries is we teach, lessons and things, the important aspects of the gospel and the church and what the church believes. And then when we get to a certain point, we invite the people that we're teaching to pray about, the Book of Mormon specifically, and about, the prophet Joseph Smith, who we believe to have restored the gospel in its fullness, and about the church and whether they should follow the Savior's example and be baptized. So we got to that point in our lessons, and we invited her to do so, and then the next lesson that we had with her, it was my companion and I and our word mission leader again, and we met with Jody, and I remember asking her if she, would be baptized. And I remember her pausing for a little bit. It wasn't like an immediate yes answer, but I remember her pausing for a minute as though she was really contemplating and thinking about it. And then she said, yes, that she would be willing to be baptized. And so from that point, we, get her prepared in terms of, there's a baptismal service that we do, and we invite other people to come. And I remember, she had a question about, who baptizes me, basically. She asked, who's baptized? Is that something that you missionaries do? And I remember asking me, and, we definitely do that, and I perform many baptisms on my mission, but we like to try to get somebody that's local, somebody local there that they know that they've met in the process of teaching to baptize them. Because, like you said, missionaries come and go. And it's important to have somebody there that they feel comfortable with, that they can ask questions about, or they can, talk to about things. And so I remember at that time encouraging her I said, we'd be more than happy to do it, but if there's somebody else that you feel that you would like to baptize you, that would be great. And I remember her thinking, oh, okay, she understood. And then I don't remember at what point, it was another lesson, but then she had informed us that she had called Travis and asked him to baptize her. And so for us, we're like, oh, okay, great. The friend that introduced her to the church, that makes total sense, Absolutely, that sounds great, And so we just kind of proceeded from that point to prepare the baptism, and everything went according to schedule and plan, and it went well.
So the baptism occurs, and at that point, then Travis goes to California, and that's where the baptism takes place?
Yep, he came to California. He came. I remember meeting Travis at the baptism. I had not met him before. I'd just spoken to him that one time on the phone. So he came, and then met him and performed the baptism, and then after the baptism, he went back to Arizona, which I think is where he was living at the time, and then Jody continued to come to church after her baptism and participate in meetings, and she gave a sermon or a talk in our main mass or congregational meeting, which we call sacrament meeting. She gave a talk there, which, was really, it was a great talk and things like that, so everything was just moving along like normal.
And so, having that opportunity to teach her, and then missionaries, they get transferred around to different areas. Was she someone mm-hmm. that you were able to keep in contact with after coming home from your mission or going to different areas? Or was, once you moved out of that area, was that kind of it?
Well, that was my last area. And so I taught her right when I got there, and then I had left maybe 3 months later after that. So Jody was living in the same area, and one of the things that was a complication, or not necessarily a complication, but one of the steps she had to take in terms of her baptism was she needed to move. She was living with her former boyfriend at the time,
mm-hmm.
And, as part of what the church believes, we believe in living the law of chastity, which is having, no sexual relations with somebody other than your legally lawful, wedded husband or wife. And so, living conditions are important because we want someone to not be tempted to do something that will go against what they've, committed to do as being baptized. So she was planning to move. And so I think she originally, I think she moved in, or there was talk about her moving in with somebody from the singles ward there, a ward or a congregation that's made up of young single adults. But then I remember she actually moved to Northern California right before I went home. She said, "Yeah, I'm moving to be like close to her family or something like that." She said she was moving up to Northern California. She left, and then I remember coming home a couple or a month later or so, and I do remember having conversations with her. She called me a few times to say hello and to, you know, let me know how things were going. She had mentioned that she had moved up to Northern California, and then I do remember there being talk about her moving to Mesa, Arizona as well, and I don't remember her actually doing that or not. I haven't been following the events that all took place with this incident, but from my understanding, she had moved up to Northern California, and I remember talking to her at one point, and then I also remember it was a church meeting. It was a special church meeting. It was a stake or a general conference meeting of the priesthood session. I remember being in a meeting and having my phone ring, and looking down and seeing that it was Jody, but I was in the middle of a meeting, so I didn't answer. And then she had left me a voicemail that just said, you know, hello, Elder Jensen, just wanted to, you know, call and say hello, see how you're doing, check in, kind of a thing. And then I remember calling her back and her not answering the phone and leaving her a message, and that's the last communication that I had with her.
Was there any sort of discussion with her after she was baptized? I know for a lot of new members of the church, there's the goal to be able to go to the temple. Is that something that she had talked about working towards?
You know, we talk about the temple during the lessons that we're teaching people, and she had expressed, you know, desire to learn more about that. And then once somebody is baptized, then the ward mission leader or people in the ward that have callings or positions will help work with the people of the ward to get them ready for that. So, in terms of whether she was, I don't believe she had started to take temple preparation classes or anything like that at that point. So I don't believe that portion had been, you know, moving forward.
So how did you find out about all this then?
Oh my goodness! So here's the last time I had, you know, gotten a call from Jody was in the spring of 2008, I believe.
Okay.
And my companion at the time,
the other missionary who you served with.
The other missionary who helped me teach, Jody, had come home at that point in 2008. I had been home for about a year. And so he and I had had some meetings, some conversations. We'd gotten together, and he was from Utah as well, so we had, you know, gotten together and hung out and done some things together. And we'd obviously had, you know, talked about Jody, and he had been, you know, keeping in contact with her as well. And I believe at one point she was actually coming or driving through Utah or something like that, and had made arrangements or was trying to make arrangements to try to get together with us, with my companion and I, to see us, you know.
Which is common for people mm-hmm. who join the church, convert to the LDS church, to then want to see the missionaries who teach them.
Absolutely. You know, they have a special bond with those missionaries, and a lot of times people want to come to Utah to see, you know, the headquarters of the church and to see the Salt Lake Temple and things like that. And so they'll make arrangements to, you know, to visit with their mission, the people that taught them and things like that. Yeah, that is very common. So I think she had expressed interest to do that, and for whatever reason I was not able to meet with them, and I don't remember if he had met with her or not. But anyway, after a while, you know, I had gotten married and moved into a home and was doing full-time school and work and all that good stuff. And I remember one night getting a call from my companion. And he said, "Hey, Elder Jensen, you know, just, we hadn't talked in a while." And we were doing different things in life. And he was saying, "I just wanted to check in." And he said, have you heard from Jody Arias at all lately?" And I was like, "You know, no, I haven't. I have not heard from Jody. I had called her. I think I'd tried to call her another time and just had to leave a voicemail, you know, and she had never returned the call or whatever." And he said, "Well," he's like, "I haven't heard from her either in a while." So I Googled her name, Jody Arias, and he said, "And apparently Jody is in prison in Mesa, Arizona for the murder of Travis Alexander. And, like, you know, I mean, that complete shock. Like, I mean, just floored me and just totally blew me away. And I'm like, what? You know, had no idea that was even going on. And he was just curious and Googled her name. So we, you know, talked about it for a while, and he kind of just shared with me the information that he had seen. And obviously we knew that Travis was the one that introduced her to the church and the one that baptized her. And So it was complete shock, you know. So I, you know, went up and tried to find out as much information about it as I could, and total shock, total surprise.
So it comes as a complete shock, obviously, to you that's something that she could do. Was there ever any sort of thought, within the trial? And I don't want to get into too many of the details because that's not what we're talking about. But was there ever sort of any thought that she was, you know, being made to do anything with the church, or that, you know, there was some sort of outside force kind of compelling her to do it, or how do you feel like she was embracing it?
No, there was no, at least from my perspective and in my interactions with her, there was no type of anything that was happening from a church standpoint that was, you know, compelling her to act in a certain way or doing something. And, you know, I don't even know exactly what's been testified about and things like that. But I do know that she everybody, at least from the Palm Desert side of things, was very, you know, impressed with Jody. And the church, as a member of the church, it's all about a community. And it's all about, you know, being part of something where you have similar values and you're working towards goals and things like that. And there are, you know, commandments that we are asked to follow and things like that. But, you know, really anything in the church comes down to personal accountability and doing things because you know it's the right thing to do. And so I don't think there was any kind of thing going on from a church leadership standpoint that said, hey, Jody, you need to do this, or, you know, you need to act this way. And that's what motivated her to do what she did. I think that's complete, you know, if there was any talk of that, that's completely untrue.
Yeah. As she continued to check back in with you, did it still feel like on the phone and in those times that you talked, did it still feel like she was, kind of full in as far as the church goes?
Yeah, it did. I mean, you know, she has a very, when I knew her, she had a very, you know, bubbly personality and was very friendly, and seemed like, you know, she was very happy with the choice that she made and was, you know, still going to some church meetings and interacting with the church members in the area that she was at the time. And yeah, it seemed like things were going well. I had no clue that anything negative or, you know, obviously the incident with Travis, I had no idea that was even remotely a possibility.
Well, it'll be interesting to see as this continues to develop. You know, there'll be a ruling in the case somewhat shortly, they say. So
yeah.
I appreciate you taking a few minutes and then just kind of sharing that perspective of this. And you say Arius, I say Arius.
Yeah. Well, from Jody's mouth, it's Arius.
Oh, fine, fine. From her mouth, that's fine. It's Arius.
Yeah.
You trump me,
you know,
that's
it's,
fine.
It's very unfortunate, you know, and obviously as somebody who helps someone, you know, at that point in my life was helping people with their spiritual growth and their spiritual desires and stuff, it's very saddening to know that something like this could happen. And, you know, it hurts, and obviously I feel for Travis and his family and things like that, and it's very unfortunate, but, you know, I guess it goes to show that no matter who you are or what you profess to believe, that, you know, you can be compelled to do, you know, to do two bad things. And if you do those things and you're found guilty of those things, then there are, you know, there's punishments associated with that, and that you need to, you know, you need to do those things. And so it's very sad, and, you know, I've tried to kind of keep involved with it, but it's kind of hard. It's hard to do, you know, so I've almost tried to step back a little bit away from it and not pay attention and things like that, because it's just very sad.
Well, I appreciate you taking a few minutes. Elder Jensen, thank you.
No problem, Ricky. Thanks.